Welcome to the Be Freed podcast, where we distill the world's best sources into personalized insights you can actually finish. I'm Naya, and today we're exploring a topic that's transformed countless careers: executive presence.
And I'm Jackson. I'm thrilled to dive into how anyone can develop that elusive quality that makes people listen when you speak. You know that feeling when someone enters a room and somehow changes the energy without saying a word? That's what we're unpacking today.
Exactly. And what's fascinating is that executive presence isn't some magical trait you're born with. It's learnable. We'll be drawing from Sylvia Ann Hewitt's groundbreaking research, insights from neuroscience, and practical tactics from communication experts like Nancy Duarte and Chris Voss. So, Jackson, let's start with the basics. What exactly is executive presence? Because I feel like it's one of those terms everyone uses, but nobody really defines.
That's spot on. Executive presence often feels mystical, but Sylvia Ann Hewlett's research with the Center for Talent Innovation actually codified what senior leaders look for. It's a combination of gravitas, how you handle pressure, communication clarity, and appropriate appearance. But here's the key. It's not about designer suits or power poses. It's about reliably transmitting calm, clarity, and care when stakes are high.
That makes so much sense. I've noticed people often focus on the surface elements, like what to wear to a presentation, rather than the substance.
Right. And social psychology research from Susan Fiske and Amy Cuddy shows we evaluate leaders on two universal dimensions: warmth, do you have good intentions toward me? And competence, can you execute? The mistake many make is leading with competence alone, which can make you respected but distant.
So it's connect, then lead, not the other way around?
Exactly. And neuroscience backs this up. Andrew Huberman talks about how people literally attune to your nervous system through subtle cues like gaze, vocal tone, and pacing. If you're rushed or anxious, your audience feels it immediately, whether it's a sales call or a board meeting.
That's fascinating. Speaking of subtle cues, I've heard voice plays a huge role in how we're perceived as leaders. Is there actual research on this?
Absolutely. Studies by Casey Klofstad show that people tend to perceive lower-pitched voices as more leader-like for both men and women. In some election contexts, candidates with lower-pitched voices even earned more votes. But, and this is crucial, you shouldn't force your pitch artificially.
I've definitely heard people try to put on a deeper voice for presentations, and it usually sounds fake.
Exactly. Authenticity matters more. What research actually recommends is using the lower end of your natural range and varying your melody. That combination reads as confident and engaging. Cross-language research on charismatic speech shows that a fuller voice quality with intentional pitch variation correlates with higher charisma ratings.
So it's not about sounding like James Earl Jones if that's not your natural voice. It's about finding your optimal resonance?
Right. And there are specific tactics that work. John Antonakis isolated charismatic leadership tactics like vivid metaphors, contrasts, moral conviction, and three-part lists. In a field experiment, a speech using more of these elements increased worker output by about 17%, comparable to strong financial incentives.
That's incredible. So these aren't just communication preferences. They actually drive measurable results.
Absolutely. And beyond voice, there's structure. Amazon famously banned PowerPoint in favor of six-page narrative memos. Jeff Bezos wrote in his 2017 shareholder letter, "We don't do PowerPoint, we write narratively structured memos."
I've heard about that, but isn't that a lot to ask of busy executives, writing essays instead of bullet points?
It sounds counterintuitive, but it actually saves time in the long run. The discipline of writing forces clearer thinking. Even a one-page narrative with a bluff, bottom line up front, key options with trade-offs, and anticipated questions will drive better decisions than a 30-slide deck.
That reminds me of Barbara Minto's pyramid principle. Start with the answer, then group supporting points logically.
Exactly. And pair that with Nancy Duarte's contrast structure, alternating between what is and what could be, and you've got a powerful framework for any high-stakes communication. It works for product pitches, all-hands meetings, even tough conversations.
But structure isn't enough on its own, right? Stories matter too?
Hugely. Melanie Green and Tim Brock's research on transportation shows that when people are absorbed into a narrative, they accept its conclusions more readily and remember more. That's why keeping a story bank of short, relevant examples is so valuable. They're cognitive shortcuts to understanding and buy-in.
That reminds me of Barbara Minto's pyramid principle. Start with the answer, then group supporting points logically.
Exactly. And pair that with Nancy Duarte's contrast structure, alternating between what is and what could be, and you've got a powerful framework for any high-stakes communication. It works for product pitches, all-hands meetings, even tough conversations.
But structure isn't enough on its own, right? Stories matter too?
Hugely. Melanie Green and Tim Brock's research on transportation shows that when people are absorbed into a narrative, they accept its conclusions more readily and remember more. That's why keeping a story bank of short, relevant examples is so valuable. They're cognitive shortcuts to understanding and buy-in.
Naya read in a relatable, casual, empathetic voice, like a best friend who just gets you.
This all makes sense for Western business contexts, but what about cross-cultural communication? I imagine presence looks different in Tokyo versus New York.
That's a critical point. In Work Life with Adam Grant, Aaron Meyer explains how directness, disagreement, and hierarchy vary dramatically across cultures. A concise, blunt message that wins in New York can read as rude in Tokyo.
So how do you adapt without losing authenticity?
It's about understanding the default settings of each culture, then making targeted adjustments. For example, you might add relationship-building time before diving into business in relationship-focused cultures, or soften how you surface disagreement in cultures where harmony is prioritized.
That's really helpful. It's not about completely changing your style, but making thoughtful adaptations based on context.
Exactly. And in our increasingly global, hybrid work world, these skills matter more than ever. On Zoom, you have fewer levers for presence. Voice and the first 30 seconds matter even more. Simple shifts like positioning your camera at eye height, opening with a clear why now / why us statement, and using names to pull people in can make a huge difference. Let's get practical. If someone wants to develop their executive presence starting tomorrow, what are the key areas to focus on?
I think about 5 channels you can work on: mindset, message, voice, body, and words. For mindset, physiology comes first. If your heart is racing, so is your message. 2 minutes of coherent breathing before high-stakes moments can make a huge difference.
I've definitely felt that mind-body connection before presentations. What about message?
Use frameworks like Duarte's contrast structure or the Heath Brothers SUCCS checklist from Made to Stick. Simple, unexpected, concrete, credible, emotional stories. For example, instead of saying, "Our retention metrics need improvement," try, "One number matters this quarter, 14% churn. That's 1,240 families leaving us every month."
That's so much more powerful. And for voice specifically?
Try practical drills like drop to land. Let the final stressed syllable fall in pitch on key sentences. It sounds decisive. Or breathe down. Inhale into your diaphragm, not your shoulders, for a fuller, steadier sound.
What about body language? Is Amy Cuddy's power pose research still valid?
The hormonal claims are debated, but the practical takeaway holds. Expansive posture, open chest, and grounded stance tend to make you feel and look more confident. Do a private 2-minute posture reset before you speak. Just don't overdo it on stage.
And finally, words?
Replace generic questions like, "Any questions?" with calibrated prompts from Chris Voss, "What are we missing?" or "How would you improve this by 10%? the room opens up and you learn faster. And, as Vanessa Van Edwards noted on Modern Wisdom, competence without warmth leaves people feeling suspicious, so use more we language and fewer hedge words when stating decisions.
This is all so practical, but I'm wondering, should everyone aim for the same communication style, or is there room for different approaches?
Great question. You don't need to mimic someone else. You need a style that feels true under stress. I think about 5 leadership archetypes, each with strengths and blind spots.
Like what?
There's the commander. Crisp, decisions clear, great in crises, but can read as cold. The coach asks questions first and empowers others, but might dither under pressure. The catalyst is story-driven and vision-forward, but sometimes hand-wavy on next steps.
I can already identify people I know in those categories.
Then there's the sage, data-rich and methodical, highly credible, but risks losing the room. And finally, the bridge, a cross-cultural translator who reduces friction, but might over-moderate. The key is knowing your center of gravity, then developing range.
So it's not about forcing yourself into one box, but understanding your natural strengths and expanding from there?
Exactly. And the best leaders can flex between styles as the situation demands.
So if someone wanted to develop their presence over the next month, what would you recommend?
I'd suggest a 30-day plan with tiny compounding reps. Week 1, focus on clarity. Write a 1-page leadership narrative about why your team exists and where it's going. Test it at your next stand-up.
I like that. Start with the message, not the delivery.
Right. Week 2, work on connection. Start meetings with a 30-second human headline about what you're energized by, and practice asking calibrated questions. Week 3, focus on delivery. Run a 5-minute voice sprint before important meetings and use Duarte's contrast structure in your talks.
And week 4?
Scale what works. Create a story bank of 5 to 6 short stories tagged by theme, host a doc-first meeting with a pre-read, and practice your camera presence for virtual settings. These are all small, doable steps that compound over time.
That's so practical. I think people often get overwhelmed trying to change everything at once.
Exactly. Executive presence isn't a costume you put on. It's a signal you send conversation after conversation that says, we're safe, we're clear, let's move.
This has been incredibly insightful, Jackson. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
This has been incredibly insightful, Jackson. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
I'd emphasize that presence is learnable. It's not some magical charisma you're born with. The best communicators practice deliberately, structure for thinking, and speak so we want to listen. They mix dominance and prestige wisely, and they keep learning.
And they balance warmth and competence, right?
Absolutely. You don't need to be louder to be heard. You need to be clearer, calmer, and kinder under pressure. That's presence. And anyone can develop it with the right tools and practice. That's your daily dose of Smarter from Be Freed podcast. If your brain liked it, come back tomorrow. We've got more where that came from. I'm Naya.
And I'm Jackson. Thanks for listening.